Available to order now. Press the green button, see channel 743, go to sky.com/orderboxoffice or call this number.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellon.
Hello.
Well, last week was a really intense conversation, wasn't it? It was all about Project Big Picture, the big plan that was going to shake up English football and going to shape its future. And of course, within 24 hours of our podcast dropping, it had all been basically shelved, hadn't it? It had been thrown into the bin and thought, well, that's a terrible idea. We won't be doing that, will we? Thus rendering our podcast useless, wasn't it, Terry?
No, not at all, because, I mean, we only added our voice to the throng opposed to Project Big Picture, and they buckled under the weight of our massive throng. So I think we can say that, that chalk that one up to the Sound of Football and our cohort of many activists.
Yes, Jan, it must have been our influence and our massive throngs.
I'm trying not to think about the latter, but I think that our red hot takes were all it took. I think we just pushed it over the edge. I think there was a loud voice calling out, wasn't there? And we just pushed that over. So it's good. It's dead for the moment. It won't be dead for long, though, will it?
Well, no.
Nothing is dead for long, yeah.
No.
Sooner or later, everything comes back to life.
You can't help but feeling that this is like an early 1990s film and we're still about half an hour away from the credits, aren't we?
Oh, at least.
Absolutely.
I'd say we've just got the opening credits done. I think there's a lot more to go on this one.
Yes. Considering that Project Big Picture covered a lot of ground, there are a lot of things in there that will return. And although it's been kicked into the long grass, all of the problems that the EFL are facing and everyone else in football are facing at the moment haven't gone away. It's not as if they came out with a better idea to replace it. These things are always going to be sat in the background and also will be referred to again and again and again. So I'm glad we had the chance to talk about it while it was still a potential thing that might happen. But I think we will be going back to certain aspects of what was in Project Big Picture, I think, quite a lot over the coming season.
Yes, I think you're right. There'll be elements of Big Picture that will come through again and we may well see come to fruition. And also, as the economy suffers and as English clubs continue to suffer, it might well be that they'll have to revisit this. It's interesting that it was Oliver Dowden, I think, in a Common Select Committee who confidently said that no one's going to let any EFL clubs go under. I'm not quite sure what he meant by that. Well, I mean, I understood the words that he spoke, but I don't know how that was going to actually happen. So it's possible that the agenda's sort of like got have been taken away from the architects of the scheme, because, you know, without that carrot of the payout to offer them, then there isn't that much of an incentive to go for it. But we'll have to see how that works out. There's also, it's worth bearing in mind, Gary Neville has recently spearheaded a new blueprint for how to change football. And he's taken on a number of different luminaries, including, one Andy Burnham, King of the North. It'd be interesting to see how much traction that takes on. There was a big stage breaking news event on Sky Sports News last Thursday when it came out, but that hasn't actually created that much interest. But it might be interesting to see how that goes. I think it's fair to say that there are numerous competing interests around football and people seeing this as an opportunity to gain some influence and some power and conceivably some money.
Yes.
The huge injection of cash that was planned with Big Picture came with a caveat of, you had to sell your soul effectively to keep your club afloat. So it'd be interesting to see what the central power does with this, if they're going to somehow step in and keep clubs afloat. I would imagine it would be a good thing for a government to do, because it we've talked before about communities being decimated. If the communities are also being decimated by a virus and also unemployment caused by the virus, actually keeping the clubs afloat might give them some kind of beacon of light that things will be okay in the end.
One thing that did happen this weekend was the switch over from Premier League matches all being televised as part of usual subscription packages to the Premier League's led pay-per-view scheme. Now, this means that all the games that aren't being shown on Sky or BT or were scheduled to be shown anyway, as part of the enduring package, are now being sold through those broadcasters, but with the money going to the clubs themselves, charging £14.95 for the pleasure. Now, I probably should explain this to international viewers who aren't aware, but in the UK, you cannot see all of the Premier League games live. You may be able to see all those games where you are, but we can't hear. The only ones we can see, well, we can only see usually about half of the games are actually shown live. The others are usually shown at 3 o'clock, but now they're not. They're all spread across the weekend, but we still can't see them through the normal package. If we want to see them, we have to pay £14.95 a shot now, which does seem quite expensive. Well, that's what the reaction has been anyway. Jan, your team's not in the Premier League, but this has been a way for you to watch Sunderland for a little while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, the last couple of seasons, it's been great with the iFollow service. Basically, you get like one and possibly two camera views. It's not the greatest spectacle to watch. And initially, it was there were no replays and there was no commentary at all. So it was a bit dry. But from last season, they started putting in the BBC local radio station would do the commentary for it. They do one replay. And it actually becomes quite watchable. It's pretty good. I quite enjoy it. And it's tenner per game, which, yeah, is a lot of money, but I can't access it anywhere else. And I live 350 miles away from Sunderland, and even if the stadium was open, I couldn't go there because it's too much of a trek. So, yeah, I'm a fan of it for my purposes. I have a different view on the Premier League side of it, though. But if you're a fan of a club in the, you know, the kind of lower two leagues, In summary, I think it's a pretty good service.
Well, the key factor is when the iFollow thing was brought in, it was free for season ticket holders, wasn't it?
Yes. So during the COVID thing, when that happened, the season ticket holders could effectively offset that against their season ticket. Sunderland did get in some hot water when they said, look, we've given you this instead. We don't necessarily want to give you your money back, which died on its arse fairly quickly, as you might expect. But yeah, I mean, if you forked out for a season ticket, you should be expecting a refund in fairly short order, shouldn't you? Because there's no chance, I think, that you're gonna get to see a live game this season. So if you want to pay as you go, then I think that's a pretty good way of doing it.
Okay, well, you've mentioned the fact you have a different opinion on the Premier League's one. Do you want to go into this now, or shall I get Terry, who's probably champing at the bit, to have a go at pay per view? Go on, Jan, you tell us what you think.
Well, the fact is that in September, all of the games were available for anyone. You pay your BT and your Sky subscription, and you get access quite literally to all of the football, because as you said, it's been moved around, and it's been moved around to keep us all pacified, and so we can still see the football while we can't actually physically go to the games. So that was okay. But they've sliced off a few games, and it has to be said, they're not the biggest games. They're not the type of ones that you'd stay in for, but games of football nonetheless. But you find yourself in a situation that if you're a proper fan and you've paid for your season ticket and you're in discussion with the club about whether you're going to get that money back, and then you've paid for BT and Sky, and then you're paying for pay-per-view, effectively you've forked out three times just to access the content you normally get, which I think is not right. I think it's a cynical move, really, to try and get more money out of fans in football. And this seems to rest really within the Premier League, doesn't it? There seems always to be that attempt to milk that cash cow. So, yeah, I think it's a really bad thing, a bad idea. 15 quid is far too much money when the cameras are already there. So it's not like you can compare it to iFollow and say, well, you get more cameras and you'll get commentary from people who are there. The fact is that all that's already in place, so there's no real excuse for it to be as much as it is.
Come on, Terry, what do you think of this PPV thing?
I think I mentioned a few weeks ago actually that in principle, going into the future, into our COVID future and our coronavirus future, that will be quite likely that there'll be people in the future who ordinarily would go to a football match, but now won't go to a football match. And that actually a televised version, a reasonably priced televised version, is probably quite a good idea. And indeed, for guys like Jan, who are exiles from their clubs, it's a great idea because you get the opportunity to watch your team play where you otherwise wouldn't get that opportunity. And so, again, you know, the price, I guess, it's always got to be negotiated, you know, to a degree by the market and by how much these things cost. But now, if Jan is happy to pay a tenner to watch Sunderland play, then so be it. I'd have to say, in a similar position, I'd probably be of the same view. The mate of mine is a Liverpool fan, doesn't have a Sky subscription, but he buys a Now TV day pass when Liverpool are on the telly on Sky. And that costs him about a tenner. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that as a transaction. I think that's perfectly reasonable. With the difference with this, one is the price is ridiculous, because as you've pointed out, Jan, you know, the production and transmission and broadcast costs have already been covered by the existing overseas television deals. These games are being transmitted live to America, to Asia, all over the world, and those costs have been covered by the money that those broadcasters have paid. So you already have that covered, so you can wipe that away. Significant amount of this is going to just simply be going directly into the Premier League club's pockets. And again, you're asking people who were season ticket holders who can't go to the game, some of whom have already, as Jan points out, paid up for their season ticket, now having being asked to pay twice to watch the same game, and they don't even get to go into the ground. That just doesn't seem fair or just in this moment. And to have gone from a situation where everyone's agreed that we'll put the balance of the games that weren't covered by the Sky or BT deals on Sky and BT and the BBC anyway, and then to have gone, well, actually, we don't want to do that anymore. We now want to go to this pay-per-view model. In these circumstances, that's a pretty shitty thing to do anyway. But then to charge £15 is really, really out of order. I mean, it's just bang out of order. It's rude, and I don't know whether or not it's just that they can't empathise with people sufficiently to see how rude it is, or perhaps more worryingly, that they're so desperate for money that they feel that they have no choice but to charge this amount.
If the Premier League had said, look, we're thinking about goodwill gestures, or we're thinking about bailout schemes for the EFL, these matches, we're going to put them on pay-per-view, we're going to charge £15 a pop for them, but all the money that we get for this goes to the EFL. If you're going to charge £15, would that have been more of a PR coup than a PR fail that it's actually become?
Yeah, it would have gone down better. I think that if you were in a situation that we might be in a few months' time, where you've got clubs that are literally just going to disappear, although you did have Macclesfield the other day. But I think if it was more of an epidemic within football of clubs just disappearing, I think that would have been a really good move, and people would have backed it, definitely. Maybe not at the situation now. I don't think it's apparent that it's dire enough for the clubs further down the chain.
I agree with Jan. I think that would have been a sensible option. But I mean, it's clear that they obviously feel that they have to do this and they have to charge this kind of money. And again, what we don't know is whether or not it's simply because of survival, because they've got concerns about their futures, or it's just gouging. But either way, it doesn't really work for them. But I agree that if they had said, look, this is all going to be part of some solidarity package for lower league and grassroots football, then we'd have gone, people, you know, it would have been harder to have argued against that kind of thing. But, you know, it clearly isn't. And it's hard to really see the Premier League, in view of Project Big Picture, it's hard to imagine the Premier League really thinking about things in those terms. Everything has to be transactional with the Premier League, and I don't think they're capable of solidarity. I think I've said that before as well, to be honest.
I think that these decisions are not made by football people. They're made by commercial people, and the Premier League and the clubs that within it are products, and they're just trying to leverage their product to get as much money out of the consumer as they can. If you saw in any other industry, you'd go, well, you know, that's just the way it is. But because football has a more personal relationship with its customers, which I still find is an awful thing to say, that you know, we find it objectionable.
Obviously, pay-per-view is nothing new, but we're used to seeing them for like big events like boxing matches, things that are trailed months in advance to try and build up the importance of it and the value of it, and to try to convince you that this fight that's going to be on in the middle of the morning is certainly worth £25 of your money. But can you really see it happening with things that are happening every week? Can you really see even season ticket holders, people who would go there every week, stumping up and saying, right, okay, I'm going to have to go and order this again? I think if they'd discounted it or made it completely free, hopefully they should have made it completely free for anyone who's got a season ticket, or if you could have bought a season ticket pass for this, say, well, look, all the ones that we're going to have on TV from now on, you can buy them all for like, 40 quid, 50 quid. Mm. And I'm sure that would have worked even better. I'm sure people said, yeah, okay, we don't know how long this is going to go on for. If you say that's the end of the season, then fine. There just doesn't seem to be any thought into the price point on this, is there, Terry?
No, there hasn't, Graham. It appears to be completely arbitrary. They could have gone down the road of, as you say, Graham, you know, charging a nominal fee to say, look, you know, guys, you know, we need some kind of break-even money here in order to do this. You know, we can't just, you know, include it for free as part of the package. I hope you understand. Sorry about this. It's going to cost a fiver. And then you market it to them and say, well, look, this is how you would have had to have paid 60 quid to go to the game. We're asking to pay a fiver to watch it on the telly. You know, you wouldn't have watched it on Sky or BT because it's not part of the pack. So when you put it like that, then, you know, at least you've then got terms of an argument that you can then make to people. But they don't appear to have done any of that. And they go, right, they've not thought through the whole, you know, do we give it away for free for season ticket holders? Well, yes, they could do. But the thing is, you then got to find the season ticket holders. You then got to be able to marry it up against Sky and BT's own customer base. And then you've got to be able to get it work, or you've got to be giving them like vouchers that they can log in with. Logistically difficult to organize getting that to season ticket holders. It's not impossible. It's done all the time, but it requires probably more than a few days to work out. It requires probably a few months actually to work out the logistics behind that. In the meantime, they should have just gone, look, what we'll do, and maybe this is what they will end up doing, is that in November they'll end up cancelling the whole thing, going back to the way it was before, and then at the start of next season saying, actually, we're going to do a full comprehensive pay-per-view option for fans who can't go to the games. Because maybe by that point, people will be back in the stadiums. Maybe not full, but they'll be back in the stadiums. But they might think this actually is a way forward. We should do a pay-per-view option for fans who can't make it to the game and can't watch it on their Sky and BT. And actually, I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. But you're right, they've given no thought for it, and they've given themselves no time to properly prepare for it. I was suffering the Crystal Palace Brighton game yesterday, and they were plugging these pay-per-view games during the match. No, it wasn't actually. Sorry, it was another game on BT. I beg your pardon. Anyway, I thought I'd just drop in the fact that I thought that Palace Brighton game was awful. but there, it was Darren Fletcher. It was, and he had his script with which to, you know, plug the game, but he wasn't injecting any energy into the copy. You know, he was just reading it out as though it were a statement. Sheffield United v Fulham, I think it was, you know, such and such a day, such and such a time, this is how much it costs, you know, available on these platforms. And that's it. And nothing more. The impression that you get there is that he's not being encouraged to try and sell this, which they will do. When you get to the Champions League promotions, and don't forget the Champions League coming up, that's going to be great, really exciting. United versus PSG, can't wait for that one. But then, oh yeah, by the way, we've got this pay-per-view event. No, absolutely, you know, whenever they try and plug pay-per-view events, they always try and inject some energy in it, but not this one. They clearly weren't interested in this. And I suspect that the broadcasters are not up for this. They've done it because they've been asked to, and because I suppose they probably make a little bit of money out of it. But I don't think that they're happy about it either.
They probably don't want to be caught in the backlash, do they?
Well, they are, aren't they? They are.
Well, I know they're calling it, but I mean, if it was, you know, they conceived the idea, then, you know, they'd make themselves look really, really bad. Whereas at the moment, the Premier League's taken all of the crap for this. You know, the broadcasters aren't really getting too much of it.
Well, to be honest, Jan, I don't think that is the case. I've seen quite a bit on social media today about people, a lot of Newcastle fans actually got together and actually paid £15 to a local food bank. I think they generated £19,000. And a couple of the ones I saw that it was like, shove that up your ass, Sky. And so they were Sky were the ones getting the blame for this when it was a Premier League decision. I'm sure both BT and Sky are looking at this as a PR disaster. Yeah, you're right, Terry. I mean, if it was a big fight coming up, they would be absolutely going for it, hammering it, and they do all the time, don't they? Any sort of event. If it was a new series coming out on Sky Atlantic, they get more energy for that than these pay-per-view events. No, I think they look at it on what it is and an absolute disaster. And of course, technically, it's no skin off their nose because these are the international feeds. I'm sure they're going to be taken. They have commentators. They have the full package there. So it's all going to look very, very slick. It's not going to have Radio Newcastle doing the commentary for them from just two cameras. It's got the full replays and everything on there as well. So you are getting a premium product, I suppose. That was a whole thing about when they made it free, was because you've got those feeds available and no crowd. So you've really got to try and make your product better at the moment, because it is diminished by the fact that there's no crowd in the stadium. I personally think that the broadcasters are absolutely livid about this decision.
Yeah. I mean, and it is worth just bearing in mind that they are charging us for something that they've already got made their money back from. They've already got the money for the coverage to put these games on. So a significant proportion of that is going to be pure profit that's going back into the Premier League clubs. There is an additional cost in terms of like carrying it through their networks, and that is expensive. So a big slice of that will go on there. And Sky and BT will go in there saying, well, yeah, we're going to have to support this as well. And if you've ever worked in supporting over-the-top and satellite and cable-based pay-per-view events, it requires a great deal of support, because it always mucks up. Somebody always breaks it. Somebody always, you know, presses the wrong button, books the wrong event, books it by mistake, is banging on the phone, then on the phone going, I've got this, no, I don't want it, and or it doesn't work, and all of that stuff. And because, you know, there are a significant amount of people who don't know how to use television, even though it's over a century old. And Sky and BT have to deal with all of that. So that means getting more people into their call centres, having more technicians on around when they wouldn't necessarily already have there. You know, it costs money. So for them, they're probably thinking of this, we're just going to get criticized, and it's going to cost us money, and we'll do well if we make a couple of quid per sale out of this. We don't really want to be involved in that. I think that the Premier League should have just simply, you know, swallowed this loss and said, we'll keep things as they are. And then what we'll do is we'll come up with what we hope is a fair and good value proposition going forward for subscribers who want to watch games that they can't ordinarily watch on Sky or BT. A pox on them.
And it's against their model as well, if you think about it. Pay-per-view is not where they want it to be. They do the odd one when they, you know, the big events that we talked about. But the reality is they want you subscribing. They want that money coming in every month. They want you signed up for a year or longer. So it's kind of against the way they do things. So it probably didn't sit very comfortably with them for many reasons.
Absolutely.
Now, listeners, if you are fundamentally opposed to the Premier League's decision of pay-per-view, don't think you're getting one over them by going to the pub to watch it. If you really want to protest about this, just do not buy it and do not watch it at all. Actually, if you want to watch it through an illegal stream, because that will hurt them more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't want to encourage people to do this because obviously it's illegal. But, I mean, it costs you less money to get a VPN subscription for a month and a DAZN subscription or an ESPN Plus subscription for a month than it does for one game. Okay, it's probably cost you about a tenner to get those two things, and then you get a whole month. It's illegal and you shouldn't do it. But this is why this is a daft thing to do, because you're effectively, not everyone's going to know this or will want to go through the trouble of doing this. I certainly couldn't be bothered to do something like that. But there will be people who will. And this for them will be like, this is our opportunity to maybe to just get that hooky fire stick that my mate's been like talking to me about for ages and I've not gone and done it. You know, you do have to be careful about encouraging piracy, don't you, Ian?
Yes, Terry, you absolutely, you've got to be careful of that. And it could well drive ordinary law-abiding citizens. Into the hands of criminals.
It could. Straight into the hands of criminals.
But we love our telly, don't we? And what we love doing as well is we love to take grabs of incidents during the game, put them up on social media, and then rant on about how terrible it is, or how useless the authorities are, or how useless the broadcasters are for not going into it as to how you saw those incidents. There were some big incidents this weekend, some huge incidents. Probably the biggest one of them all this weekend was the injury of Virgil van Dijk, which I don't think you can move on social media for getting long lingering looks of the incident, the collision, the ill-timed lunge of Jordan Pickford going into Virgil van Dijk and knackering his knee. Guys, let's talk a bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about the incident itself. I don't really want to spend too long on it, but we'll talk a bit more about the reaction to it rather than the actual incident. Jan, we've all had a look at the incident, haven't we? Mm. What was your reaction to it? Now, this is obviously, Jordan Pickford is a former player for your club. So are you willing to cut him a bit of slack there on the challenge?
Yes, not only for that reason. When I was thinking of this earlier, I thought, someone's just going to go, well, he's from Sunderland, so he's bound to give him a bit of slack. But to be honest with you, while I feel terrible for Virgil van Dijk, that's an awful injury for him to suffer. And you could see he was in real, real pain when he came off the collision. But in my view, that's exactly what it was. It was a collision. I think that Pickford got off his line really, really quickly. If you look at the shape of his body, he does what all good goalkeepers do. He had one foot that was standing. His other one was spreading out, as well as his arms. And he was extending himself as much as he could to make himself as big as he could to stop what was going to be the incoming shot. He got out there really quickly. And he collided with Van Dijk. I don't think there was any intent there to hurt him. In fact, he was the first person to insist that, you know, nothing should continue until the medics were on the pitch. So I think it was just a really unfortunate incident. I think it's correct that Pickford isn't sanctioned for it.
Terry, would you go along with that?
I agree with everything that Jan has just said up to the last few words. I think that it was sadly dangerous play. But I mean, I don't think for a moment that Pickford intended to harm Virgil van Dijk, and I think that he acted in good faith, but at the same time it is clearly reckless and it is clearly dangerous, and I feel that actually, you know, a red card would have been appropriate under those circumstances. The sadness is that I think that it would have been better for Jordan Pickford if he had been given the red card, because I think a lot of the reason why he's taking the kind of stick and the abuse that he's taking now is because he's seen to have got away with it. I think it might have been easier for him if he had actually got the red card. Jan may disagree because of what he said, but I don't think too many people would have actually taken issue with the referee had Pickford or VAR for that matter, which was David Coote, wasn't it, who was the VAR, if Pickford had been sent off there and then. I don't think too many people would have taken issue with it. People would, because, you know, people argue. And I think that that would have been the right thing to have done. But I think it's very, very sad that what's happening to Jordan Pickford now, because I don't think for a moment that he intended to seriously injure Virgil van Dijk. I don't imagine he's probably the kind of individual who would like to sit, you know, intentionally injure anybody, is he?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the area you start getting in when you start considering intent, and it's not one that I'm going to waste too much time on. It is this whole sort of, well, he's not that kind of player, is he? I didn't see anything in the incident that suggested that he's gone in there to take him out. Yes, it's clumsy, but he's a goalkeeper. He's going for the ball with his left foot. I think most strikers know that if you're in a 50-50 with the goalkeeper is going to get the benefit of the doubt. Always happens. And there is a good reason for that to happen, is because being a goalkeeper is the most dangerous position on the pitch. You've got boots flying into you where you're going to go in, usually with your hands. They're usually the biggest guy on the pitch, and they hit hard. And you've got two huge guys there colliding with each other there on the pitch. Things break. Yeah, there would be no argument as far from me if that had been a penalty. Probably no argument as well if it had been a red card as well. The fact that he didn't even get a yellow for it is amazing. I said on social media at the time, I said that it would be interesting to see what kind of retrospective punishment he gets because the VAR didn't do anything. In the old days, if he hadn't got a yellow card, he would have got a red card after the game because they would have said, right, okay, well, you missed the incident. If the referee had given a yellow card, you wouldn't have got any further punishment afterwards. But now you've got VAR and you've got to think, well, that's all done away with. You've got people looking at the incident. And this is what I think what most people are dumbfounded by, but the fact that VAR just didn't bother looking at it because it was far too interested to have a look to see whether Virgil van Dijk was offside.
They applied the letter of the law too strictly with this. So they went, well, it wasn't a penalty because it was an offside, so we'll just wind back from that. And I think that's, they just got themselves lost there. I think this is a VAR issue rather than a Jordan Pickford clattering Van Dijk issue. I think it just adds more to the frustration that people feel, because it was supposed to make everything perfect and it still obviously relies on people making decisions. It's just a different person making the decision. So if anything, you could argue that Jordan Pickford is actually doing us all a favour by showing VAR up to be what it really is. He took one for the team.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, it's a good point because what VAR is supposed to be able to do is it's supposed to allow officials the opportunity to take a breath and review something. I mean, you can understand why referees will make decisions or maybe not make decisions in the heat of the moment. For any number of reasons why they might decide not to give a foul when they certainly should have given a foul. And one of the benefits of VAR was supposed to be that, you know, somebody's whispering in their ear saying, actually, mate, something happened back there that you might want to have a look at and have a think about. I mean, I think that that's the thing that didn't happen was that, you know, they didn't call the ref over and say, maybe you should just go to the screen and check that out, see whether or not you think any further action needs to be taken. And this is the thing, is that the process clearly has failed. And it would appear because the VAR, David Coote, not for the first time, actually, I think, not reported something or not taken action when he should have done. And I think it's been acknowledged by the PGMO that they should have done. Once again, there's questions to be asked about the effectiveness of VAR and whether or not it's really doing what it's supposed to be doing, or if it is, as Jan says, it's just another fallible human being added into the mix, you know, and going back to that adage that the last thing the game needs is more officials. It doesn't, I'd say.
Well, no, it doesn't. But maybe it does need a bit more respect for the officials, because another clip that was doing the rounds quite a lot this weekend was one off the ball. It was an incident on the sidelines between Sergio Aguero and the referee's assistant, Sean Massey-Ellis, where Sergio Aguero put his arm around the assistant referee, and that's actually caused quite a lot of anger amongst a lot of football fans, hasn't it, Terry?
Yeah, amongst a certain number of football fans, but not all football fans. It also seems to polarise, as is rather tediously the thing. That nobody seems to be able to just like look at something that's clearly in contravention, apart from the laws of the game, and just agree that actually, you know, he's got away with that one. I mean, you don't touch referees in that manner. You don't touch referees at all in the game. That is the law. You don't do it. And so Sergio Aguero has broken the laws of the game by doing so. And that's really, to a degree, you know, on one level, that's the end of it. But the deeper aspect of it is, of course, is that it's a female referee. Once again, Sean Massey-Ellis finds herself in the middle of a storm that is not of her making. All she's doing is her job. And she does a very, very good job as well. She's one of our best linesmen, assistant referees. And she finds herself in this position where you've got blokes behaving inappropriately, and she ends up usually being the one, you know, having to bear the brunt of it, which I think is extremely sad. I mean, Sergio Aguero should apologise for behaving the way that he did. And I'm sure that if he did apologise, then Sean Massey-Ellis is probably big enough to say, that's okay, can we move on, please? I'm not wishing to put words in her mouth, but it's very, very clear that that is not an appropriate way to touch a referee, and it's not an appropriate way to touch a woman. I thought we had well-established conventions in our behaviour that common sense should tell you that. Now, I mean, I'm sure Aguero is a lovely man, and I'm sure he was probably acting in what he felt was perhaps an act of kindness or friendship or what have you, but it is not appropriate, and that needs to be explained. He just needs to say, oh, I'm sorry, or, you know, I don't know whether or not it's appropriate to take, you know, action against him in terms of breaking the law. It probably is, but, you know, it certainly we should begin with an acknowledgement that that should not have happened.
I think most of the reaction of both these incidents have been just along tribal lines, haven't they? With the Virgil van Dijk incident, it was basically on club lines, whether you're a Liverpool fan or whether you're a fan of anyone else. For this incident, this was obviously a chance for people who hate feminists to have a go at people who thought it wasn't right. Now, what Terry said, beyond the fact that this was done to a female assistant referee, players shouldn't be putting their arms around the refs, should they? Because as much as anything, what he did there, psychologists will tell you this, and I've seen this a lot from people defending him online. They've been showing up pictures of other players with their hands on male officials, usually on their shoulders, in a dominant position, in a position where you're placing weight down on an official. And that is, a psychologist will tell you, that is you exerting authority over someone else who is meant to have the authority in the game.
Absolutely, yeah. I've heard that said. You see it with politicians, that hand on the back thing. You're right. It is an assertive and an attempt to dominate that individual. And to be honest with you, and all of the right wingers out there that probably don't listen to this show for very good reasons, but we'll probably groan when they hear what I'm going to say next, because out of the two instances with the Van Dijk injury, which was horrific. Don't get me wrong, that was awful seeing that man scream in pain. But I was more disturbed by watching what Aguero did there than I was by the first instance, because of exactly why what you said, Graham, because it was clearly patronizing. It was massively inappropriate. I would say, actually, when you see it, there's a different angle to this as well. She is, albeit only slightly, is pulled towards him. Now, that could well be just because he's a lot stronger than her, because he's a male. She is moved by that. She actually, I have to say, handles this absolutely brilliantly. Because if you look at her face, she clearly, if she was bothered by it, you couldn't tell from her face. Yeah. She's an absolute pro. And when he did put his hand on her, I don't know what it was. Either it didn't bother her or she was trying to push him away. Because you know yourself, if you play sport and you're against another competitor, sometimes if you've had a bit of a coming together, you might stand up, you might, give each other a bit of a slap and off you move on. And that in a game where you're actually, against each other amongst the players, I don't think that's too much of a drama. When it comes to the officials, absolutely, there's no need for it. And when you're doing it in the manner in which I believe he was doing it, whether consciously or subconsciously, I mean, it was pretty awful. It's an awful thing to see. And if you are a female looking to get into football as an official, say, I think you'd probably look at that and go, well, okay, it doesn't happen every game, but you would look at that and go, do I want to be treated like that in my place of work? Well, any sane person would probably say no.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more there. I mean, it's interesting because Pep Guardiola was defending Sergio Aguero, but he, of course, has form in this, because he got into some trouble a few years ago when he was coach of Bayern Munich by putting his hand on Bibiana Steinhaus's shoulder when she was the fourth official during a Bayern Munich game. And to which Bibiana Steinhaus reacted very evidently that she was not happy with that, and that was not good. I don't recall whether any action was taken about it, but Guardiola was really quick to defend Aguero. And I'm sure, again, Aguero, I'm sure he is a nice man, but I mean, that doesn't really, nice men do oafish things, unfortunately, even with the best intentions. Men do oafish things, and this was an oafish thing to do, and proper action needs to be taken.
Yeah, he's probably watching that back today or last night and just going, why did I do something so stupid?
Yeah, or hopefully got somebody, people near him have gone, look, man, that wasn't cool. You can't, you don't. That is not cool.
Yeah, as much as anything, it's just not professional. And he just shouldn't be doing this.
No, especially when there's many, a child up and down the country got his picture on the wall, and they'd look at him as being a real hero for him. There's a burden upon him to show that he is, he can be a proper role model, and he failed yesterday. He really failed, and that's a terrible signal to be sending any female that wants to get into football, and certainly the kids that look up to him.
Yeah, I think the worst thing of the incident is obviously the position it put Sean Ellis in. And she was in a no-win situation there. If she'd called the referee over to discipline him for what he'd done, can you imagine the shitstorm that would have come out then on social media?
Sadly, I can imagine, Graham, yes, it would be a shitstorm.
Yeah, and you're basically seeing it anyway at the moment, anyway on social media, without her doing absolutely anything. But obviously, these people who are coming out with this crap are not worth paying any attention to anyway. Yet again, it was a day when social media really did let itself down as much as anything else.
Yeah, that's why I stay off it these days. Because I'm glad I haven't seen some of the stuff. I wouldn't even go back onto into Twitter and try and find out what people have been saying, because I could just imagine it. Must be awful. Have been awful.
Yes. Well, hopefully this weekend we can watch some football without any ugly incidents. Maybe VAR will work perfectly this weekend, but I wouldn't hold your breath. But we've got some big games lined up. There are always big games, aren't there, like coming up at the weekend. But we have El Clasico on Saturday afternoon, Saturday 3 o'clock. And luckily we can watch it now, because I think still the embargo is switched off, even though it might damage their PPV money-making schemes. So we've got that on Saturday afternoon. And Saturday early evening, we've got Borussia Dortmund versus Schalke. Terry, how's that going to go?
I don't say what will happen because I don't want to put the muckers on it, but Schalke are terrible. Absolutely terrible right now. So it would be a major upset.
They're no longer bottom, though, are they?
They are. No, that's very true. They managed to get a point yesterday, but they are pretty awful. A delegation of Schalke ultras went to the Schalke Stadium at the end of the game yesterday after their disappointing 1-1 draw, and wanted to speak to the players because they are concerned about the level of performance ahead of the Revier Derby game. That's how big a deal it is. And, you know, the stakes couldn't really be higher. But I'm not going to make any predictions because I'm frightened.
That's a bit like what happened to Alan Pardew. Do you remember when he was in Holland? The fans came, I don't know if it was after a game or it was certainly during a training session, and just started remonstrating with him and the players and just telling them how bad they were.
It's a thing in on the continent. It's definitely a thing.
It is, yeah.
Well, if you want to see what we think of the best games to watch from your armchair this weekend, we won't have any pay-per-view games in there, honest. We'll have the 7 games that you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. Then get along to sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the weekend box set, and you can either read it on our blog or you can sign up and get it in an email. This week, it's going to be a little bit of a special one for us, actually, because this one will be, Terry, I don't think you know this, but this one will be our 500th TV preview.
Bloody hell. We've written 500 of those bastards.
Since 2008, when we started, before we even met up with Oakers and started doing them on Some People Are on the Pitch, we did them when we were still doing the Onion Bag. We started doing them on the Tactics Track when we set up a blog the first time, and we realised that blogging was hard, so we thought we'd just go on to Oka's one instead, which he happily allowed us in on, and the rest is history, as they say.
As is Oka's blog. Not a coincidence, we should point out. We did not kill Oka's blog.
But as soon as we came in there and stunk it out, he got rid of it. Yes, and if you want to see what a true Oka's blog is about, then get along to kitbliss.nz.
Yeah, because we've got nothing to do with that, and it's really good.
But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry Lefevlin, it's goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Arr.
Yarr.
Yarr.
Yarr. Yarr.